You're tuned in to This Week in Palestine, a space where truth is never trimmed to fit the margins, where resistance is lived rather than imagined, and where solidarity is not a passing season, but a constant pulse. From the heart of occupation, voices rise, not in isolation, but together, in chorus with movements across the globe that demand justice, dignity, and liberation. This is not just a broadcast. It is a lifeline, a thread that stretches from Gaza to the world, from shattered homes to unshaken hope, from rubble to resolve. Each week, we bring reporting that refuses euphemism, analysis that cuts through distortion, and reflections that center Palestinian life in all its depth, defiance, and humanity. We trace the architecture of empire, the policies that suffocate, the narratives that erase, the weapons that silence, and we follow their echoes across borders, from Ferguson to Jenin, from refugee camps to classrooms, from Gaza to the global conscience. Before we begin, a necessary reminder. The views expressed during this hour belong to our hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WZBC, Boston College, or its Board of Trustees. This is not a space for polite avoidance or sanitized soundbites. It is a space for truth, bold, urgent, and unapologetic. Good morning, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from, thank you for being here. I'm your host and narrator, Abby Masri. And it is a profound honor to welcome you back to This Week in Palestine. Today is Sunday, November 23rd, 2025. And once again, our gaze turns to Gaza and the West Bank, lands under siege, where homes lie in ruins, where lives are uprooted, where voices struggle to rise above the weight of global indifference. As headlines fade, the truth remains. Palestinians continue to resist, even as the threat of re-invasion looms. Let's be honest, Israel has never sought peace. It has sought opportunity. Opportunity to ethnically cleanse, to erase, to rewrite history with bulldozers and bombs. And the world knows. The world watches. Some in silence, some in complicity. But will it finally reckon with the cost of that silence? Will it choose conscience over convenience, action over apathy? And still, one question refuses to fade. How long must a people suffer before the world decides to care? Stay with us as we strip away silence, as we uplift resilience, as we carry forward the flame of justice. This journey is not mine alone. It is ours. It is shared. It is urgent. And it is sacred. You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio, WZBC, Boston College. The ceasefire ends, or perhaps it was never truly in place. Once again, Israel breaks the ceasefire, and I ask myself, where is President Trump? Didn't he say over and over, the war is over? Where are the guarantors of this truce? The United States, Germany, the UK, France, Italy, Egypt, Jordan, the UAE. Why does nobody hold Israel accountable for breaking the ceasefire they themselves claim to guarantee? The numbers tell the story. Since October 10, when the ceasefire was announced, more than 1,000 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza by Israeli strikes. The Palestinian Health Ministry reports 1,000 deaths and nearly 800 wounded in the week since the truce began. On some days, the toll has been staggering, 100 killed in a single day, including 50 children. UNICEF confirms that at least 67 children have died during this so-called ceasefire. So what kind of ceasefire is this? Is it a ceasefire when bombs still fall on homes, hospitals, and refugee camps? Is it a ceasefire when families are erased, when children are buried under rubble, when aid convoys are blocked? Or is it simply a pause, a political illusion designed to buy time, to shift headlines, to silence outrage? Israel claims it is responding to attacks. But even when no Israeli soldiers are harmed, the strikes continue. Entire neighborhoods are targeted. Displaced families sheltering in mosques, UN-run clubs, and apartment blocks are killed. The violence never ended. It only slowed into a steady rhythm of death. And yet, the world remains silent. President Trump repeats his refrain, "The war is over." European leaders echo the language of security and self-defense. Arab states enforce the siege, normalize relations, and look away. The ceasefire is broken again and again, but the blame never falls on Israel. Why? Why does the world allow this? Why do they condemn resistance but excuse genocide? Why do they demand Palestinian compliance while ignoring Israeli violations? The truth is clear. This ceasefire was never about peace. It was about optics. It was about control. It was about shielding Israel from accountability while the killing continued. And so we return to the question that history will not forgive us for ignoring. Why does nobody blame Israel for breaking the ceasefire? Why does the world choose silence over justice? Today, we are going to talk about Palestinians, not as headlines, not as statistics, but as human beings, neighbors, friends, members of a community. How does it feel to have a Palestinian as a neighbor? What if the person next door is Jewish? How would the Palestinian neighbor treat him? Would he throw trash at their door? Would he scratch their car or break their windows? Or would he do what Palestinians have done for centuries, offer hospitality, share food, extend care, and treat the neighbor as part of the fabric of life? Too often, Palestinians are spoken about as if they are not worthy, as if their identity itself is suspect, as if their presence in a neighborhood is a threat rather than a gift. We hear this in the way people talk about places like Dearborn, Michigan, a city with one of the largest Arab and Palestinian populations in the United States. And yet, how often is Dearborn reduced to caricature? How often is it described as a place of bad neighbors and bad community? But let's ask a simple question. What would happen if you lost your wallet in Dearborn? Would it be stolen, discarded, ignored? Or would someone pick it up, return it, and remind you that dignity and honesty are not bound by ethnicity, but by values? The truth is, Palestinians have carried values of hospitality, generosity, and resilience across centuries of displacement and struggle. They have built communities in exile, welcomed strangers, and held fast to traditions that honor the neighbor, whether Muslim, Christian, or Jewish. And yet, the narrative of suspicion persists. It is fueled by propaganda, by racism, by the deliberate attempt to dehumanize Palestinians so that their dispossession can be justified. If you convince the world that Palestinians are bad neighbors, then you can convince the world that their homes, their land, their very existence can be taken away. But history tells a different story. And today, we turn to a voice that reminds us of that truth. I bring you a clip titled, "Jewish Rabbi Gives an Islamic History Lesson." The rabbi is Rabbi David Weiss, a member of Neturei Karta, an Orthodox Jewish group that has long opposed Zionism and stood in solidarity with Palestinians. Rabbi Weiss reminds us that Jewish and Muslim communities lived side by side for centuries, not in perpetual conflict, but in coexistence. He points to the long history of Jews finding refuge in Muslim lands after being expelled from Europe. He recalls how Jews thrived in places like Baghdad, Damascus, and Jerusalem under Islamic rule, protected by laws of hospitality and respect. His lesson is clear. The problem is not Palestinians, nor Islam, nor the neighborly bond between peoples. The problem is Zionism as a political project, an ideology imported from Europe that sought to erase Palestinians and claim their land. It is this ideology, not the people, that has poisoned the narrative. So when we ask, How does it feel to have a Palestinian neighbor? We must strip away the propaganda. We must remember that Palestinians, like all people, want to live in dignity, to raise their children in safety, to share food across fences, to greet neighbors with peace. And when we hear people speak of Dearborn as if it were a place of menace, we must challenge that. Because Dearborn is not a place of bad neighbors. It is a place of resilience, of culture, of community. It is a place where wallets are returned, where neighbors look out for one another, where Palestinian identity is not a threat, but a source of strength. Rabbi Weiss's words remind us that history is not what propaganda tells us. History is lived experience. And lived experience tells us that Palestinians are not the caricatures painted by those who wish to erase them. They are neighbors. They are caretakers. They are human beings who deserve the same dignity as anyone else. So today, as we listen to this clip, let us remember, the question is not whether Palestinians can be good neighbors. The question is why the world has been taught to believe otherwise. And the answer lies not in Palestinian behavior, but in the machinery of erasure that has sought to strip them of humanity. Stay with us, because this conversation is not about suspicion. It is about truth. It is about history. And it is about reclaiming the dignity of a people who have always known how to live with others, because they have always carried the values of hospitality, resilience, and care.
Hello, my name is Rabbi Chaim Sova, and I'm a Jewish scholar student. I study the Torah most of the day, with a small part of the day I'm working also. My background is my parents were born in Iraq, and they were forced to immigrate by the Zionist terror squads that blew up, unfortunately, Jewish synagogues, Jewish cultural and business centers in order to make the Jews thinking that the Muslim doesn't want them in Iraq anymore. And that's how they forced the mass immigration, forced immigration from Iraq to Palestine in the beginning of the 50s, 51, 52, 53. About 110,000 Jews were forced to immigrate to Palestine, replacing the natural historical indigenous, the Palestinians. And they were also forced to flee and expelled about 900,000 Palestinians, unfortunately, at al-Nakba, at the disastrous war of 1948. Yes, I was born in Palestine, and I enjoyed all my life with extraordinary great relations with the Palestinian neighbors that left in Palestine that luckily were not expelled. I was connected to anti-Zionist rabbis in Palestine that explained to me and to many other Jews, as in Palestine, the danger for having a Zionist state in Palestine. As we Jews, as you know, Jews are in exile, they're not allowed to have their own state, not in Africa, not in Russia, not in America, and especially not in Palestine. They were ordered not to revolt against the Palestinians and not against any other nation. We're not allowed to have an army. We're not allowed to create our own nation, not a currency, not anything that what will show us that we have a nationalist expansionist aspirations. We're just Jews that considered Jews with our religion. We are in exile under the divine decree, and we've been ordered to keep great relations with our non-Jewish neighbors. And we're going to talk about it, about how Jews and Muslims used to live. And first of all, I'd like to bring you a regards from tens of thousands of Jews that lives in England, non-Zionist Jews in Stamford Hill, Gateshead, Manchester, and more places. Orthodox Jews that do not recognize the existence of the State of Israel, refusing to go to live there and to send their children to serve in the Zionist vicious terrorist army that are bringing to reality the expansionism and brutality of Zionism, which turned to be a Zionist super supremacist power that would like to expand, deport, destroy, kill, just because they think that they are the great people, they are the one. Zionists are not cursing the Jews, They uprooted most of what of the principles of the Torah. They're distorting the Torah. They're using expansion, occupation, and genocide in the worst, forcibly, in the name of the Torah. According to the Torah, there's no such thing. Jews are supposed to be good to non-Jews. Jews were always that what had enjoyed a great relationships with the Muslim nation. As we see, we've been ordered to what? To give charity for non-Jews, to visit their sick people, to, and God forbid if they die and no one can take care of them from the Muslims, we have to give them a respected burial. And it was both ways. There is any justification even without the Torah. The Torah is not allowed in the occupation of Palestine. The Torah is not allowed the rebellion against the Palestinians. But is there any human justification to have a state of Israel with a military that would so-called protect himself? Israel is always was, of course, with all its atrocities, occupation, expansionism, and genocide, which they conducting against the Palestinian people, are considered itself as the victim. And that's because of their enormous power in the world media, that they control completely the world media in America, in England. And unfortunately, now they're working hard to control even the social media. So always they're trying to show, to distort and to rewrite and to rebuild the new history, that there was no way how to protect the Jews, but only to what, to conquer Palestine, create a strong army, genocide the Palestinians or even other nations from the surrounding neighbors, and that's how Jews will survive. Is that really the case, that Jews couldn't survive by Muslim states, by Muslims, but especially by the Khilafah? Throughout the history of Muslims, of the Islamic Ummah, is Jews could have not survived, or they were, at the contrary, were survived, protected, had mercy from the and tolerance for the Muslims? So if we just looked about the foundation of Islam, Al-Khalif Omar Abu Bakr and his Al-Khalif Omar ibn Khattab, Al-Khalif Uthman, Al-Khalif Harun ibn Rashid, the Abbasid Bet Umayyah Khalifat, the Abbasid Khalifat, the Fatima Khalifat in Egypt. They all had an outstanding history of tolerating and respecting and protecting the Jews and have them under their custody. That's all started at the time officially put the foundation, the Khalif Omar ibn Khattab, which was a great righthood Khalif, and he put the foundation that the non-Muslims has to be taken under what? The mercy and protection of Islam, of the Muslim nation, and they will be able to what? To practice their own religion, and they will be able to what? To live freely under the protection of the Muslim government. This foundation was kept, and in exchange to pay the jizya. The jizya was a symbolic tax that the Muslim put on the Jews or even other religions to show subservience and loyalty to the Khalifat. That's it. That was the whole aim of the jizya. The Jews were very happily paid the jizya because they knew that they received a lot more than that. Poor Jews were exempt from the jizya. Jizya was not a tax that was forced by power. People was very happy what to collect it and to bring it to the offices of the Muslim kingdom from Morocco till Afghanistan, because they knew what they received back. Muslim neighbors with Jewish neighbors will live so peaceful. They used to babysit each other. They used to what? To invite to the weddings each other, of such an extent that we don't see today that much, because unfortunately there's very few Jews left over that lives in the Muslim countries. If we go to the what, to the Andalus, to the golden era, in Spain that continued for the first 300 years, when the Muslim army came from Morocco and through the Gibraltar Water Strait, released Spain, and there the Jews were very happy to receive the Muslim army. And the Khalif, Abd Rahman I, which fled from, he was the descendant of Bet Umayyah, he was at the Abbasidis captured what in Baghdad, the center of power from the Bet Umayyah, which their center was in Damascus. But the Abbasidis built their center of power and culture in Baghdad. And he fled from Baghdad, he came to Spain, and he created his own Khalifat, a very powerful Khalifat that was continued for 300 years. He and his son and the grandson Abd al-Rahman III, and al-Hakim I and al-Hakim II, with another few kings, for 300 years, that was considered the golden era. Jews, even though that enjoyed from a great time all over the Muslim states, but Jews will always remain the golden era in Spain. It was a time that the Jews developed what's their religion of such an extent that most of our Jewish religious books from 1,000 years ago are dated to Spain, because the time that Jews and Jews enjoyed over there from such a great freedom of religion, and they were able to practice their religion and to develop their religion to such an extent that we didn't see even though that in Iraq could have been compete with the freedom of religion that we had in Spain, but it was like it was parallel. Even though it was a two types of Khalifat, here it was the Abbasids, and he was a descendant of the Beit Umayya. But the Jews were tolerated to such an extent that we have longingness to that time, really. But then it didn't end up even there. In the time that was that the Muslims has been driven out from Spain, the Jews went with the Muslims together, and they left Spain, and they were again welcomed by Muslim states in Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, Libya, Egypt, and Turkey. The Sultan of Turkey, Abdul Hamid, said he was very happy to receive tens of thousands of Jews. He says the king of Spain, he didn't have a brain, that he kicked out all the Jews from Spain. My country will flourish now, because Jews are very, very good in business. And he welcomed them, he promised them again, he assured them that their religious rights will not be harmed, will not be touched, as it was in any of Muslim country. It was like a tradition by the Muslim to confirm and to reassure the religious rights of Jews up till this time. And what should we say, the 500 years of the Turkish Khalifat, the Turkish Ottoman Empire, also we're very proud to what that the Jewish religion was flourished at that time, in Palestine, in all the northern Arab countries, Iraq, Transjordan, Syria, Lebanon, and of course in Turkey. Blood libels were not allowed even to be brought to the court. All these vicious, blood libels that Jews are using was blood for their religion, which is one of the biggest lies. Jews are not allowed, but even Jews, we eat a chicken, we have to drain out the blood from the chicken, from the cow. And here they tell us that we drink, God forbid, blood from children. But the Muslim states, it was forbidden according to the Sharia, according to the Muslim law. There was no right for anyone to bring such a false claim against Jews by the Muslim courts. And we're very thankful for that, for give us the right to practice our religion. Our economy was flourished. We had a great time. We were being protected. So there was no reason for us why to just say, finished. Now we would like to become enemies. How could it be after such a 1400 years of such a great time, suddenly we're going to change our attitude and say, no, it's time now to bomb you, to kill you, to expand. Those Jews who live among the Muslims never dreamed about what having a state and an army and to fight the Muslims. If you would have told to some Jews, you would like to have an own army, under your own army to protect yourselves against the Arab countries, you would have thought that you're drunk or you're just simply crazy. And we would say, okay, I can take your name to pray for you that you should be healed from your sickness. And that's who are the Zionists? A nationalist movement which does not recognize the authority of the Torah, who does not recognize there was God's will that Jews are supposed to remain in exile till the day which God will unite all the world to worship one God with Messiah. If you look at all the prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Amos, yes, and all the number, all the 48 was the prophets which were written by us. The thing is that the whole world will benefit from Messiah. There's no conquest, there's no killing. Messiah will bring the whole world to worship one God and receive a new status from God to bring a better world creation. No one will think about killing, no one will think about expanding, no one will think about stealing. Money will be so it was so prosperous, the world, that people will not think about it. People will think one thing: I'd like to serve God. I'd like to hear what God wants to for me. I'd like to make myself more spiritual and better. Many people, no one, that's the era of Messiah. That's why all the world will accept Messiah, but according to what we believe, yes, is because that he will bring to a better world, a world with peace, without any bloodshed, without any hatred. All these disputes about oil, gas, natural resources, we usually bring what the world, all these disputes to fight each other, all this will be disappeared. No one, if I'll tell you, I found for you oil water, oil area, full bit oil, you can come get yourself, you can become a multimillionaire. Just leave me alone. I'd like to serve God. I'd like to pray for God the whole day. That's interesting to me. At that time, that's what the Maimonides says, that all the Jews never waited for Messiah to control, expand, and to be supremacist or to step at the head of the nations. No. Nothing near to that. It's just that we want to rest and to serve God. And you'll not, all the nations, the world nations will not be on the other side of the road. They will join us. So that's why there'll be no really resistance from the world people. The great prophet Zechariah says, when Messiah will come, so a lot of force of war, huge movement of force of world nations, let's go to Jerusalem to study how to serve God under Messiah. That's what will happen with these nations. And they will be, but the world will go to a higher level of spiritualism that we not really cannot understand now. However, Zionism, the nationalist movement, does not believe in all these things. They believe to be strong, to expand, to kill, to be vicious, to behave like a barbaric, like the Mongolians in 1,000 years ago. That will bring for them the blessed. That will bring for them the best defense. Never been such a movement in the world that put endangered Jews like what they're doing in, not only in Gaza, in the West Bank, in East Jerusalem, the expansionism, the ethnic cleansing that goes on now, what up till now, thousands of houses been destroyed in the West Banks, thousands of acres what been stolen and been built. That's that this supremacism, this brutality, this ethnic cleansing are not serving what the purpose of the Jews. The Jews were not receiving people who love them because of these vicious, barbaric acts. Now, about the genocide in Gaza, what the Zionists are specialists to bring hatred to Jews in all over the world in order to force them to leave their places where they live. They want that Jews will not be tolerated in America, Britain, France, Germany. They want all the Jews to emigrate to the great Israel and there to bring their own, to build their own kingdom and to make a change of religion. Yes. The Zionist state has been supported by Christian evangelists, yeah, who give them billions of dollars a year and give them all the power they need in the White House, unfortunately, in the Senate and the Congress, in order to use and to exploit all the richness and the power, the military and economical and political power from the United States of America. United States of America suffer from homelessness, millions of people sleep in the streets, the economy is very bad. And people what have to send their army to send their children to protect a foreign power which controls the America through the Zionist lobby, which makes sure that no politician in America, congressman, senator, or even a president, cannot be elected unless he has to proclaim a total loyalty to who? Not to America, to the state of Israel. And that brings a lot of hatred. That what has never had in the world, that a real strong state that have any natural resources has to give everything for free for another state. Why? Because their politician has been this. That's not good for us. We the Jews have to be for people that as much less as the non-Jews will think about us, will see us in the street. It's better for us. But if I'll come and I'll try to control, to expand, to steal your property and to kill your children, of course people will start thinking about me, how vicious I am, how barbaric I am, and it's time to be united to kick me out. And that's why the Jews survived 2,000 of exile only because they were subservient and friendly and obey the laws of all the states which they live. We have extraordinary example how Jews lived in it by the Muslim states, so peaceful and so good, because they understood that this great Muslim nation are here to help them and to protect them, and they were very happy to be loyal to them. Zionist nationalist is just another worst movement that was like in the time of the socialist movement, the communist movement. I here just want to show a nationalist foreign power that colonizing, expanding, killing, destroying, and they think that that would be the benefit of the Jews. At the contrary, there's the anti-Semitism and hatred to Jews grew up on an amazing extent because of these vicious, barbaric acts of ethnic cleansing from Palestine from 1948, 67, and then what in the West Bank, and stealing what, and not allowing what for the Muslims to their natural historical right to pray in Jerusalem, and especially now the starvation, the total destruction of Gaza. More than 90% of Gaza has been wiped out. 2.2 million Palestinians, they're not anymore 2.2, I think it's even less than 2 million now, because they killed already hundreds of thousands of people through starvation, bombs, killing, and sicknesses. Is that bring for us the bless for the Jewish people? I'm asking you, if any Jew sees it. Is that bring for us a bless that what that in our name, yes, people, what the Zionist army, this Zionist vicious terrorist army, wipe out another nation? Is that going to bring us a bless? Good name? Yeah, we the Jews know that we're the chosen people. Is that a chosen race, a nationalist race that's supposed to kill and expand and destroy and exploit other nations? No. Chosen people is just because we received the Torah. And through the Torah we have more commandments, yes. But that doesn't mean that it's given us in the world a right to kill and to be so vicious and to kill them with starvation, which the Torah says that death through starvation is even much worse than a death with a sword or with a bullet. It's much worse. The pain, we feel the pain. We cry out for the destruction of Gaza. We're crying for the genocide of my Palestinian brothers and sisters, because the Palestinians were tolerating the Jews. I forgot about talking about how good they were for Jews. I spoke to a Palestinian person, which his grandfather, he was a police officer by the time of the British regime mandate in Palestine. When there used to be Jewish immigrants that fled from Europe, from the Nazi Holocaust, he used to come and take them from the beach and smuggle them into the Palestine against the British law. Would you believe it? He had a mercy on them. And he told me, now take a look, their descendants have kicked me out from Palestine. I told him, these are not Jews. Those who did to us are not Jews. Because all the Zionist terror gangs that were committed was the war crimes and the ethnic cleansing, it was in 1948, were very, 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 very strong atheists. They even did not believe in God. Who talks about all the 613 commandments of the Torah? So we have to say that what we have to put at the what our foundation is that the real Jewish people, and we have even more than a million people in Palestine, America, Great Britain, Australia, and France, which are opposing the basic existence of State of Israel. The State of Israel does not bring any blessed, not for Jews, not for Muslims. State of Israel brought destruction on Jews and on Muslims. State of Israel endangering Jews and Muslims in the world. The existence of State of Israel is forbidden by the Torah, and all their acts are not represent the real Judaism. Real Judaism is mercy, tolerance, and even love even non-Jews. We even commanded to love non-Jews, to help them, give them charity, help them with what we can, and that's alhamdulillah, thank God, we do it every day. So I'm asking also my Jewish colleagues, open your eyes and take a look to what is that disaster the State of Israel bringing what for Jews and Muslims combined. The suffer that non-Jews and Jews having from the State of Israel is enormous. It's unbelievable that the world sitting quiet, seeing what, they're not quiet, thank God, but the world wake up and see the genocide, the ethnic cleansing, the theft, the brutality to all men and women, to babies and children, so many innocent lives have been destroyed forever. People become sick forever. How many people became blind because of the Zionist atrocities? It has to be stopped. The first thing is that we need the world nation will stop the genocide, kicking out the Zionist military, terrorist military from Gaza and from the West Bank of East Jerusalem. That's the first thing, before everything. Allow a steady flow supply of clean water, clothing, food from all types, without any restrictions. And then, yes, to allow to dismantle this vicious terrorist state of Israel and bringing peace back again to the Middle East by establishing a Palestinian state from the river to the sea that would welcome and tolerate Jews, Muslims, and Christians. Pictures today, up till now, even after the foundation of this vicious Zionist entity, we see an example of 12,000 Jews in Morocco that live so peaceful with their Muslim neighbors. Djerba, Tunisia, it's an island. The Muslim neighbors are tolerate and love their neighbors because they know that they have nothing to do with Zionism, and that's also in Morocco. Iran, I can tell you one story. In the middle of the 12 days war that the Zionist regime has waged, this horrific war that killed so many innocent people in Iran, in the middle of the war, there was Iranian soldiers went into a synagogue, Jewish synagogue in Tehran, and they prayed there. Who were these soldiers? They were Jewish soldiers that were happy and loyal to their land and to serve their land in a time of a war. So they came with their uniform to practice their Jewish religion. Jews are very welcome in Iran. Iran is not a vicious country. It's a very peaceful country. Tolerate always. They have an outstanding history of helping, hosting, and having mercy on Jews. It's just as well today that the Zionists, in order to justify the occupation, ethnic cleansing, and genocide, must rewrite and falsify the history. They must, they are having a very hard time to distort the history that Muslims were so good for Jews, and now they would like to show that Muslims were bad for Jews. But why do we have to look at the history of 1400 years that combined that Muslims were great people for Jews? We look up till now in Morocco, Tunisia, and Iran, and in Turkey. We have the five Muslim states, main state, that there's many Jews live there. Altogether, we're talking about 140,000, 150,000, I don't know the exact number, but it's a large number fairly. You can ask the Jews that, do they have problems from their Muslim neighbors? The answer is no. But why, if they would have had problems from their neighbors, they would have got out. There was even one, the current Zionist was the war criminal, Netanyahu. This terrorist that killed us was having in his hands blood of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians, innocent Palestinians, on his filthy hands. He went to Djerba, that's where there's about 1,000 Jews who live there. And he was asking them, come to Israel, come to the Zionist entity. They told him, no, we're not interested. We're not enemies, and the Muslims are not our, Arabs and Muslims are not our enemies, and we live here good. We would like to remain Jews also because of our religion. And every Jew that comes to your land, you're trying to destroy his religion and to make him a liberal Zionist atheist. So this rebellion that's supported by some rich people and by this Christian evangelist here will be failed, because the Torah says that this rebellion will be failed. The rebellions against God has no success. And as many more Palestinians they're going to kill, will be bigger the punishment that they're going to receive. So, as I said, the only solution is the dismantling of this Zionist state, bringing back the land for its owners, that's the Palestinians, and they will assure that Jews and Christians will receive a fair treatment from the Muslims. As it was, the Muslim nation does not need my recommendation. They, just as they were great, to Jews and Christians, they're ready to do it. As we know, even one of outstanding example, the Sultan al-Khalif Salahuddin al-Ayyubi, Salahuddin Yusuf al-Ayyubi, he was a great Sultan, and he was great for Jews and for non-Jews as well, for Christians as well. I remember there was a case that in the middle of the battle, a woman has lost her daughter, and she was Nostra's daughter, and she was captured by Muslims, soldiers. That was at the time of the fight against the Crusaders. And this Muslim soldier took her, I don't know what was the purpose, maybe to marry her, it makes no difference. And she went, the woman cried to the Sultan, and she told him, one of your soldiers captured my daughter. And he quickly sent his own was team of a special police force that found this daughter and brought her back to her mother. We have a lot of things to thank and to admire, especially that Sultan al-Nasr Yusuf Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi, because of his great mercy that he had on Jews. The Crusaders, when they conquered Palestine, they killed all the Jews in Jerusalem and they put them into a synagogue and they burned, what, the synagogue, 300 Jews in Jerusalem. After 88 years of conquest of the Christian conquest of Palestine, Al-Khalif Nur ad-Din Zanki, he was the father-in-law, he was like the adopted father of Salah ad-Din, started to attack to try to release Palestine from Christian conquest, and then his adopted son, Nasr Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi, has released Palestine. One of the first fatwa which he gave out is as a religious verdict here, is to allow Jews come back to Palestine and to rebuild their Jewish institutions and to come back to live in Jerusalem in all Palestine. That was a special request of his personal doctor and advisor, is Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, the Maimonides, as you know. But why would we have to go that far? If you go to the Harun al-Rashid, Harun al-Rashid was the great Khalif in Baghdad from the Abbasids. He used to give 1,000 dirham, it's a silver coin, for charity every day with Jews. Poor Jews were piled up, it was in front of his palace, and used to have a lot of share from this charity. Yes. My parents used to tell me that he used to receive a sheep every time before it was a Jewish Pesach holiday from the Muslim neighbors. And he used to give other bags of dates, bags of potatoes, and etc. and etc. That was the great relation between Jews and Muslims, with the Zionists trying to erase. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear the Iranian ambassador, Abdul Hussein al-Sardari. The Iranian ambassador to Paris have saved about 1,000 Jews from being deported to the death camps. He gave them Persian passports. He even gave it to some Russian Jews that were stuck in Paris and were supposed to be expelled to the death camps. He gave them false passports that they're Iranians. And he didn't allow, and he used to pay a lot of money for Nazi officers in order that they should keep their mouth shut and not what tried to deport these Jews. We always were going to remember the imam in Paris, the main imam in Paris, I forgot his name, who gave hundreds of certificates for Jews that they're Muslims, and that's how they avoided the deportation and a deportation to the death camps in Auschwitz. That's only one case. We will never forget what the king of Morocco, Muhammad IV, that have said to Hitler, "No, I'm not going to allow deportation of my Jewish inhabitants in Morocco." There was about 100,000 Jews, and the Nazis have demanded that the king will allow them to be deported to Poland, to the death camps, and it didn't happen because the king didn't allow it. We will never forget what the Shah of Iran at the time of the Second World War, that told explicitly to Hitler. And you have to understand, Iran was an ally of Nazi Germany till Hitler decided, was asking, "Can you stop giving so many rights for the Jews in Iran? Can you start push them into the ghettos and concentration camps?" So the Shah have said, "No way. We consider the Jewish people as a first class citizens. And we're going to protect them and we're going to help them. We're very happy to have them here. And we're not going to change the status of the Jews in Iran." We will never forget that Jews were protected in Syria and Turkey during First World War. And many, many favors that the Muslims did. If I will tell you how many favors happened here, I can tell you one thing. Miron, it's a mountain, Jermak. It's a mountain that's very holy for us in Miron. There was in 1912, there was a big disaster. part of the building was collapsing and many, many people, 9 people were killed. Hundreds of people were injured, badly injured. At that time, there were no ambulances. There was no medical centers right on the place. The closest medical center was in Safat. It's an Arab Jewish state, yeah, the city, far away, about 20 kilometers away, 12 miles away from Iran. Hussein Afandi, he was the governor of the north of Palestine, in the name, behalf of the Turkish Khalifat, the Turkish Empire. He closed the whole area. He called doctors, private doctors, which he paid them, to heal and to give a first treatment, yeah, first help for the wounded people. And then he gave a mandatory demand of all the Palestinians and everyone that have a wagon with a horse to come and to evacuate all the wounded people to a Jewish hospital in Safat. And he paid them from his own pocket. So there's thousands of such cases that Muslims shows tolerance, mercy, help, and sympathy for Jews. So there's no justification, even though that the Torah itself, what the main reason is that we're not allowed to have a state. We're not allowed to kill innocent people. We're not allowed to have our own army. But even from practically, there's no justification to have a state with a military, with a foreign power, with a power that we should control and cause problems between nations. That's not Judaism. That's racism. That's fascism. Judaism is a people that beloved by all the people in the world. Judaism is mercy, believe in one God, prophecy, charity, and learning what the Torah. Anything besides this, killing, expanding, destroying, creating ethnic cleansing, it's far away like east and west from each other. It's not belong to us. We condemn it. We live with what we live with the Gaza people. If you ask, go to Stanford and ask, do you think it's a good thing, the genocide? Everyone will tell you, God forbid. The Torah does not allow it. We're against it. We can't see the pictures of babies starving to death in Gaza. I especially, it's very painful to me. I am having contact with Palestinian people. I give them condolences and a lot of encouragement not to lose the hope that one day, and soon I hope, inshallah, that Palestine will be given back to them, and we Jews and Palestinians and Muslims will live with harmony, peacefully, as brothers, as it was and as it is now, not as it was 100 years ago, as it is now in Iran, Turkey, Tunisia, and Morocco. Yes, inshallah, and soon we will have it, and we hope to keep work together for a better future for our children and to enjoy from that extraordinary, great neighboring relations in Stamford Hill, Gateshead, and yes, inshallah, in Palestine itself and in America, all over the place. Thank you so much.
Israel is doing everything in its power to silence the world about genocide. Every strike, every blockade, every distorted headline is not only an act of war, it is an act of erasure. It is an attempt to erase Palestinian history, to strip away memory, to make the world forget that Palestine ever existed. But history cannot be erased, voices cannot be silenced forever, and truth has a way of breaking through even the thickest walls of propaganda. That is why today we turn to a voice they have tried to suppress. Let's listen to Guy Christensen. For over 2 years, they have been trying to silence him because he speaks plainly, because he names what others refuse to, because he refuses to let the machinery of erasure go unchallenged. Christensen reminds us that the struggle is not only against bombs and bulldozers, it is against silence, against the theft of memory, against the rewriting of history to justify genocide. And in that struggle, Palestinians are not alone. Every voice that refuses erasure, every witness who refuses silence, every ally who insists on truth becomes part of the collective memory that Israel cannot destroy. So stay with us, because this conversation is not about suspicion. It is about truth, it is about history, and it is about reclaiming the dignity of a people who have always carried the values of hospitality, resilience, and care. Now, let's listen to Guy Christensen.
They couldn't do it. They did everything in their power for the last 2 years to stop Americans from learning the truth about Israel, and they failed. Half of Americans say Israel's doing genocide now. They did everything they could. They redefined anti-Semitism to include criticism of the state of Israel. They fired everyone in the mainstream who didn't align with their narrative. They dropped $250 million on our elections last year and ousted everyone in Congress who said the truth about Israel's crimes. And they started to work on our major social media platforms, first passing the bill to ban TikTok for hosting anti-Israel content. Next, Meta, they hired hundreds of ex-Israeli spies from the IDF to enforce their free speech policy, which they used to wipe the app of pro-Palestinian accounts, blacklisting them, me and many of my friends, ex, owned by Elon Musk already, who was sent to Israel after he tried helping the Palestinians by giving them Starlink internet access to the humanitarian aid workers. And after that, you have Elon Musk banning his own AI chatbot, Grok, when it tells the truth to people about the genocide of Gaza. They tried things like arresting thousands of students, professors, and activists protesting on our college campuses. Then they started taking away funding from those campuses if they permitted those protests and fired those professors working there who are critical of Israel. They deport our activists who are immigrants, who are here on visas and green cards, and they still lost. They may have the power now, the institutional power, the influence in our government, but they will never, ever have the people power here in America again. The Americans will never, ever support the state of Israel ever again. When I started standing for Palestinian liberation, I made it my goal to educate Americans. We needed to win the people over by showing them the truth about Israel, because Israel could not be doing a genocide. They could not be attacking every single one of their neighbors. They could not be committing the worst crimes of the century were it not for the United States' support. And without the people's support, the support from our government will not last much longer. And even though the fight's far from over, even though I believe my TikTok account's getting banned tonight when new guidelines kick in, TikTok's new algorithm that opens the door to wipe the platform of pro-Palestinian content, something they've wanted for years, I'm proud knowing what our community has accomplished. This summer, we raised $350,000 and sent it right to Gaza. We helped 80,000 people for months. We supported children with their families, journalists, UNRWA, anti-genocide politicians here in the United States. We reached hundreds of millions of people and showed them the horrors of the occupation, the truth about the Zionist project of Israel. And they can ban my account, they can ban all my friends, they can ban you guys, but they still lost us forever. There's no coming back from this. There's no turning the tide. All the sacrifices I made, all the fights I took head on, the attacks too, it was all worth it. For the Zionists we exposed, the companies we boycotted, the politicians and news outlets we pissed off, we made a massive impact. I hope I've inspired you guys to raise your voice. I need you guys to know how powerful you are, how powerful your voice is. You don't need to be somebody to change the world. You don't need to be anybody at all. All you need is your voice. They can never take that away from you. They can never make you stop speaking. No matter what they do, you still have your tongue. You can change people's lives. You can save lives. And the world is counting on people like you to put your empathy and your humanity first. We've been through a lot together on this page, from FBI investigations to getting slandered on the front print of the New York Post. And I have to tell you guys from the bottom of my heart, I'm gonna miss you. And I've sat here thinking about how I would characterize my journey as a content creator on TikTok. And the only words that I could find that would fit is that this has been delicious to my soul. One of the most fulfilling experiences of my life. And if this is the last day I have a large influence online, then I have to say thank you. It was worth it. I love and I will miss you guys. If you don't want to lose me yet, the link in my bio will let you follow my Substack page. Subscribe so you hear about all my future videos. One last time, guys, thank you. And free Palestine.
And with that, we come to the close of this week's episode. As always, stay curious, stay courageous, and keep asking the questions that unsettle power, challenge silence, and light the way toward justice. I'm Abby Mossery, your host and narrator. It has been a profound honor to share this space with you, a space where truth is spoken without compromise, where resistance is carried with reverence, and where solidarity is never up for negotiation. If you have reflections, questions, or hopes to support the work we do, or if you feel called to step behind the mic as a future host, we welcome your voice. You can reach us anytime at twippodcasts@gmail.com. To our listeners, thank you for your time, for your trust, and for your willingness to walk this path with us. To the brilliant team whose vision and dedication keep this platform alive: Bob Funk, Stanley Robinson, Stephen Lowe, Sophia Rose Wallman, Tahani Abu Mosa, Dr. Rana Awad, Dr. Bethany Marks, Professor Yara Rashid, Juliet Salame Olivier, Reynaud El Ghul, and our editor Mohammed El Ghul. Your labor, your spirit, and your unwavering commitment are the heartbeat of this show. You remind us that storytelling is not merely a craft. It is resistance. It is care. It is collective memory. Until next time, keep walking toward truth. Keep walking toward Palestine. This Week in Palestine is a production of Truth and Justice Radio, proudly broadcasting from WZBC Student Radio at Boston College. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. We'll return next week. Until then, take care and stay steadfast.
Walk with me, my son, up over the hill. Let me show you the land where our memories still live. See those broken stones where the old house once stood. That was our home, where we laughed and we loved. That big farm right there, with the olives so green. They stole it from us, you know what that means. We harvested life from the roots of these trees. Now they're strangers' hands, taking all that we need. Look, son, that was our village. Now it's dust and it's pain. They came from the west with their guns and their chains. But remember these fields. Remember. One day we'll return, I swear it again. We gathered here, family, under the moon. Stories and songs now all gone too soon. They burned every door, they tore every wall. They'll never take what we carry in our souls. Teach your children the truth, let it live in their veins. This land is ours, no matter the chains. Through fire and time, through exile and years, our roots run too deep to be washed by their tears. Look, son, that was our village. Now it's dust and it's pain. They came from the west with their guns and their chains. But remember these fields. Remember our name. One day we'll return, I swear it again. So walk with me, son, don't turn away. Hold this land in your heart every day. For as long as we breathe,
still holding the key.